Today is Thursday, March the 10th, 2016. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Pikudei.
My hungry is Hashem and not so good.
Okay.
Thank all of you for coming for this great class. Before I forget, once again, there's somebody that was very generous and very kind and filled up our closet with all kinds of paper goods and things that we normally use. And I'd like to let you know that for a period of time, you may not need anything, but those people who have brought and brought today, I really do want to thank you. It's very much appreciated, and so I needed to take a second to let you know that you're appreciated. Your generosity is appreciated, and your friendship as well. We are going to be davening Marv. It's a Chodesh Tov to everybody. We're going to be davening 3 minutes after, approximately 3 minutes after the class, and I'd like to thank the synagogue and the rabbi and those who took the time to get this room ready for us the way that they do. Very much appreciated. The generosity is wonderful. Thank you very much, Rabbi, and thank you for those who
all the people,
all those who helped to make the class what it is. I get a little help before you guys come, and I want to express my appreciation for that as well. Ramosha, we didn't discuss this, but next week. I'm going to be involved in
no problem
situation, and also we have Sheva Brachas after that, and then we have a wedding after that.
Yeah, I understand. So we're going to be out of town anyway for most of that.
So no class next week.
Well, next week.
Jerry, 2 weeks from today is Purim.
Right.
So there wouldn't be class anyhow. And the following week, we'll be at another wedding in New York.
Yes.
The following Thursday. So
okay, the weekend, right? So how many weeks are we talking about here?
So it'll be Pesach
for that. It's not Pesach yet.
The 24th and the
30th. The 24th
before the 20th. I'm going to be extremely busy.
No, I understand. Yeah. One Thursday is
Forum. So, no, it's next 3 Thursdays is no class. That's
okay.
Okay.
And then the following week.
Without dates, you'll be able to send it. Make it very simple. The next 3 Thursdays.
So you want to cancel?
Yeah, so we'll cancel. We'll cancel next week.
So once again, there will not be classes for the next 3 weeks. I apologize for that. But
spring break.
All right. So now I'll
spring break. We have spring break. just want to, wish my daughter a mazel tov on her upcoming wedding on the 20th.
Sunday.
Wish you only the nicest things, honey. Okay?
Come in.
And everybody else here, I wish only the nicest things.
So we're going to resume on April 7th.
And 8 days after my daughter's wedding, there's a wedding down in Savannah, Georgia for my son, Brad. Yeah, so mazel tov to him.
9 days,
okay. I'm not able to
don't
count.
Don't shorten it.
Yeah, well, for the days of motion, we couldn't count right. So. Anyway, thank you all very much for coming.
I was going to discuss the opinions. I don't even want to use those words. There was some discussion between Moshe and Bezalel as to what should be built first, whether the utensils of the Mishkan or the Mishkan itself. But since we're not going to have any class till Purim, as I just found out, so I figured I'll try to talk about something in this week's Sedra, but try to connect it with Purim. So now, in this week's Sedra, now there are two questions that are asked very often. One question asked is, we find that when Moshe Rabbeinu took the utensils of the Mishkan, so he brought the utensils first into the Mishkan, into the tabernacle, and then he, in a sense, dedicated it to its purpose. In other words, the menorah. He didn't light the menorah. Technically, by the way, a menorah can be lit outside. But he didn't light the menorah outside. He brought the menorah into the tabernacle. And then he lit the menorah. He took the shulchan, the table, which had the lechem upon him, the 12 breads on it. So he took the shulchan, and he put the shulchan into the tabernacle, and then placed the breads on it. However, when it came to the Aron, when it came to the ark, so he had a different approach. He first put the Aseres HaDibros in it, covered it up, and then brought it into the Mishkan. And there's another question that's asked, and that is, I've discussed this question before. The Ramban says that the purpose of the Mishkan was to have a place, was to have a place for the Aron, for the Ark. That was the purpose of the Mishkan. So the question is, in the Second Temple, I've mentioned this question, the Second Temple, they did not have they did not have an Aron. So, they didn't have the Luchos. So the question is, what was the purpose? Why did they build the Second Temple if the whole purpose of the temple, of the tabernacle, is to have a place for the ark, and they didn't have an ark? And then we can change that question over the opposite way. Why didn't they make an ark? Now, it's true, they didn't have the luchos. They didn't have the tablets. But the fact is, let's say if one for some reason can't light the menorah, there's still a mitzvah to have the menorah in the Mishkan, according to most opinions. There's still a mitzvah, even when the menorah can't be lit for whatever reason, there's a mitzvah to have the menorah in the Mishkan. The question is, why didn't they have, it's true, they didn't have the tablets, but they should have built an Aron, because it's a utensil of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple.
Would it be a mitzvah to have the Aron there?
Well, so that's the question. That's exactly the question. But the question is, what's the difference between the other vessels and the Aron? That's the question. So, now, in regard to the first question and the third question, there's a very simple answer that could be given. And that is that there is a difference between the other utensils and the Aron. The other utensils, the Aron, because it's the place that keeps the Torah. So the Aron was, without the Torah, it's considered, this is the answer I think my grandfather gave. It's just a box. The Aron without the Luchos, without the tablets, is just a box. The menorah has a special uniqueness, according to Moshitas, even when it's not being lit. It's considered special. The question is, so that's the reason in the Second Temple they didn't make them an Aron. Because the Aron without the tablets is not special. And that's the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu had to put the tablets into the Aron before he brought it in to the Mishkan. Because he had to bring the utensil into the Mishkan. It wasn't considered a utensil. The menorah is a utensil of the Mikdash. It's a utensil of the temple, even when it's not being used. But the Ark is not. I heard a certain story someone told me about a certain synagogue that they had an ark but no Torah in it.
Here in North.
Yeah, you know, you have these synagogues that don't believe in God and don't believe in the Torah. What do they call them? I forgot.
Unitarian.
Churches.
No. Not Unitarian. some of the churches believe in God. Humanistic synagogues. Humanistic synagogues. So in some of the humanistic synagogues, they have an Aron, they have an Ark. But there's no Torah in it. It makes a lot of sense. They don't believe in the Torah. They
believe in God.
They don't believe in God. If they don't believe in God, they don't believe in the Torah, right? So, what's the idea behind it? You see, Torah is, you know, there are certain people. I remember a certain person wanted a certain position. A certain rabbinical position, and the person asked my father to help him get that position. And the person, when he said to my father, he says, this person who wanted the position, he said, he's not a Talmud Chacham, he's not a Torah scholar, but he has the tzura. He has the appearance of a Talmud Chacham. So that was his positive quality. In other words, there are certain people that they are aronos, they are arks, but nothing in it.
So, how did your father handle that?
Nothing. Listen. Anyway, So there's nothing in it. You have people today, especially today. Today everything is a costume party. You have people, I know people that dress up with Bekishes and everything. Yep. And they're with the Bekisha and everything, they're smoking on Shabbos and while they're wearing the Bekisha. I mean, not to... I don't tell people how to live their lives, but a person would think that if you wear a Bekisha, and I don't wear a Bekisha, I don't come from a Hasidic background, you know, but you would think that that a person would recognize there's a certain contradiction. Yeah. That there's a certain contradiction. No, there's no contradiction. We live in a world of aronos. We live in a world of arcs. But there's nothing in the ark. That's the problem. That's why by Torah, there is a danger in having an ark without a Torah. Because people, the externals of Torah are important, but only if you have the internals of Torah with it. That's why the ark had halachic significance only if they had an aron. But if the aron was put, if it would be just an aron itself without the luchos, without the Torah in it, then it's dangerous. So this is one answer to the question. However, there are other answers also, and that is that the Aron was made. The real purpose of the Aron was made to carry the luchos from place to place. I gave the example, it's like your suitcase. It was a suitcase for the luchos. So the main purpose was not to be in the Mishkan. That's where we left it when we did not have a need to carry the Aron, to carry the luchos, to take the tablet somewhere. That was, you know, sometimes you go to a hotel, you go on a trip, you take your suitcase with you. Why do you take the suitcase with you? You're not taking the suitcase because you want the clothes at the hotel in the suitcase. You might keep them in the suitcase, but the main purpose of the suitcase is for the traveling. The main purpose of the ark was for the traveling. But when they weren't traveling, it was at rest over there. To emphasize that point, they had to have the ark have its full significance, to show that its main purpose was for the traveling. So before it was put into the Mishkan, into the tabernacle, they had to put the Aron in it, because its purpose, its function, was not limited to the Mishkan. Whereas the other utensils, in the Beis HaMikdash, they were limited to the Beis HaMikdash. When the menorah was outside the Beis HaMikdash, when the Shulchan was outside the Beis HaMikdash, it didn't have special status. But the Aron always had special status. So that's a reason why. But in terms of the question of why in the second Beis HaMikdash they made an Aron, there is another answer, and I've suggested this answer before. And I wasn't going to discuss this, but it came up that we're not going to have class before Purim, and I want to connect the Sedra with Purim. The Rambam, the Rambam says, he gives a whole history that Shlomo HaMelech knew, King Solomon knew, that the Beis HaMikdash B'ruach HaKodesh, through divine inspiration, he knew that the temple was going to be destroyed. And because of that, he built a lower compartment underneath the Beis HaMikdash where the ark could be placed and certain other things could be placed. Now, the question is, why does the Rambam have to tell us that? The Rambam should just say that they didn't have the ark in the second base of Mikdash. What is his purpose of telling us that King Solomon built a lower level? And the Rambam points out that the place where the ark was put, I know this doesn't go together with the film, but where the ark was put is directly below where the Aron had to be. It was right under the Kodesh Kedoshim, right under the Holy of Holies. So it comes out that in the second Beis HaMikdash, so the answer is, the Rambam's opinion is, and that's why the Rambam points it out, why does he have to point out that King Solomon built it? In other words, you shouldn't think that that was a storeroom. That lower level was part of the Beis HaMikdash. King Solomon is the one who built the temple. So halachically, that lower level was part of the temple. In other words, the temple was made with two places for the ark. Above and below. In the second temple, we could say, there was an ark, but it was on the lower level. Now, what's the significance of that? On the first level, in a sense, it was part of the area. It was covered up, but it was part of the area where all of the service was done. When on the lower level, it was hidden. What did the Aron represent? The Aron, on one hand, had the Luchos. But perhaps even more than that, when God appeared to the Jewish people with instructions, revelation took place from the top of the Aron between the two Kruvim, between the two images that were on or as by the side of the Aron. So revelation was identified with the Aron. Now, so the question is, so in other words, in the second base of Mikdash, they had an Aron, but it was hidden away. And that it was hidden away in the base of Mikdash, not in the place below the base of Mikdash, in the lower level of the base of Mikdash. What's the idea behind it? But there is a difference between the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash. The first base of Mikdash, there were so many miracles. There was revelation, open revelation. The second base of Mikdash. At the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, you had a couple of prophets. But for the duration of the second temple, there was no prophecy. The second base of Mikdash is identified not that God's glory wasn't there. God's glory was there, but it wasn't revealed. We couldn't see it. It couldn't be seen. It was in a place where it couldn't be seen. Even the Kohen Gadol, when he walked into the Holy of Holies, would not be able to see in the second temple the Aron. And the Aron, what does the Aron represent? The Aron, the Ark, represents the perpetuation of Sinai. The perpetuation, the continuation of Sinai. In a certain sense, in the first temple, the perpetuation of Sinai was revealed. In the second temple, it was also a perpetuation of Sinai. It was the continuation of Sinai, but it was hidden. Now, what's the idea behind it? In regard to the Gemara asks, Esther Minayin Min HaTorah. How do we know? The Gemara likes to find indications of biblical figures, let's say. Actually, Mordechai is in this week's Sedra also, because more drawer. Targum Unclus explains it as Mordechai. Okay. So where is the word Esther found in the Torah? So it says, V'hanochi haster aster paneh. God says to the Jewish people, I will hide my face. Now it's very interesting. You take a look. You hear, there are miracles in Purim. Everything turned around. But there's a famous question that many ask. The question is, why is it that if you take a look at the Megillah, God's name is not mentioned in the Megillah? The Ibn Ezra gives a very interesting answer, typical Ibn Ezra style. The Ibn Ezra says, because the Megillah was written as a letter, and Mordechai and Esther, who wrote the Megillah, they were scared, you know what you do with letters, especially if they're asking for donations. So they end up in the garbage. I didn't mean anything against anybody. Anyway, the Mordechai and Esther were scared that people will toss, since it was sent as a letter, that it's going to be tossed in the garbage can. So, not that you're allowed to do it anyway, but they did not put God's name. However, the Maharal and the Sfasemis, they give a different answer. And they say, when you take a look at the miracles of Purim, you don't see there Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea. You don't see the splitting of the sea. You don't see 10 plagues. An obstinate historian could take the whole Megillah and explain it very logically. You know, there was a king, and his name was Achashverosh, and he had a prime minister, and then there were two people that tried to... and everything just worked out so well. So, in other sense, in the Megillah, God is not revealed. We have to penetrate the Megillah to see the hand of God, to see God. The Megillah is a very nice story. About the facts, okay, coincidences happened. And there were a lot of coincidences that took place that worked for the benefit of the Jewish people. But God is not explicitly revealed in the Megillah. Why isn't he revealed in the Megillah? Because God didn't reveal himself. What is the Megillah? The Megillah represents the beginning of the Second Commonwealth. That's the time if they already started building the Second Temple, and then they had to stop building the Second Temple. But it represents the Second Commonwealth. Did not have real revelation. But the person was able to penetrate the events and see it. Now, in the, if you take a look, let me just get it. At the end of Megillas Esther, so we make a bracha. Baruch Ata Hashem Elkeinu Melech HaOlam HaKel HaRabes Rivenu, King God, King of the Universe, the God who takes up our grievances, judges our claim, avenges our wrong, who brings just retribution upon all the enemies of our soul, and takes vengeance for us from our foes. Bless the U Hashem, etc., etc. So, what's the idea? The idea is we read the Megillah. There is no mention of God. There's nothing there that a person who is obstinate couldn't interpret without mentioning the word name of God. And then we say that we penetrate those events and we see the hand of God. In our time, take the Six-Day War, a little bit before my time, 49, when the State of Israel was started. Jewish people, 48, I'm sorry, I was born in 49. The Jewish people, the Jewish people were at probably at the lowest point in their exile period of close to 2,000 years. And overnight, something that they weren't able to accomplish in those 2,000 years, overnight, they were able to establish their country. But, you know, a person could be obstinate, as many were. You know, when I mentioned the story, Ben-Gurion, when he wrote the Declaration of the State of the Independence of Israel, so there was a fight between the religious parties and the Mapam. The Mapam was the communist, he is close to communism.
Sanders. Sanders.
So the question was whether to mention God in the Declaration of Independence of State of Israel. So the religious party said they're not going to sign it unless God is mentioned, and the Mapam, I'm not saying the non-religious, just the Mapam. The Mapam was the extreme left. The Mapam said if God's name is mentioned, they're not going to sign. Now Ben-Gurion had to come up with a solution. So he said, "Betuchim anu b'tzur Yisrael." We have full belief, trust in the strength of Israel. Now, Tzur Yisrael is an expression used about God. You say it every morning, Tzur Yisrael v'golo. So it's Tzur Yisrael, saying the prayer, okay. So Tzur Yisrael has reference to God. So, but the Mapam interpret that to mean the army of Israel. Okay, so but what's the idea? The idea is that there is a tendency sometimes not to see, not to want to see the hand of God where it could be explained a different way. The Bayesheni, the second base of Midrash, and that's what the Megillah is about. The Megillah, you don't have the miraculous events that you have in the Chumash. You don't have the miraculous events that you have in the prophets, even though there were prophets still at that time. But that is the end of the period of prophets. It's V'hanochi haster aster panai. God said, I will bring miracles, but my face will be hidden. And it's the responsibility of the Jew to penetrate those events and to see the hand of God. And that's why...
Scud missiles you told us about. Uh-huh. The Scud missiles, no Jews were killed on the same
side. Yeah, that's right. When Hussein sent missiles into Israel, Scud missiles, I don't think anybody was killed. No one was killed. Tons and tons of missiles were sent, and no one was killed. I have a cousin who was a little strange. They had a picture of him on the front page of the Tribune. So when the Scud missile was passing over, so he took his finger and pointed to the Palestinian territories, because some of the missiles did end up in the Palestinian territories. It killed the Palestinians, didn't kill the Jews. Okay, but that's
in the second base of Midrash.
Not now.
Did they know the Aron was there?
Yes. Okay. So, if we know now, they knew then. Okay. So, we only know now because they knew then. Okay. So, in other words, A person has to penetrate the events. We don't have these miracles today, but we have to penetrate the events, and there are so many of them, to see the hand of God. And it's very interesting. What does Amalek try to do? So, Amalek, we say that Haman was a descendant of Amalek. So it's Kiyar al Kaiska Milchamal Hashem be Amalek Midor Dor. God put his hand on his throne, and he said, there is a war against Amalek from generation to generation. What's case? Case is part of the word kisei, God's throne. And ka is part of God's name. So God said, Chazal tell us, my throne is not complete, and my name is not complete, until Amalek is eradicated from the world. Why? Because what does Amalek do? Amalek does not want recognition of God. And sometimes they'll agree for partial recognition. What is name? Name means how we identify somebody. Who is this? We give the person's name. Full recognition. Amalek does not tolerate full recognition of God. And what is case? Case means sovereignty. V'haya Hashem, at the end of days, V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol haaretz, God will be king over the whole world. What do you mean be king over the whole world? In other words, the whole world will recognize him as king. Amalek tries his best that God should be not recognized as king, and that the world should recognize. And why is it? Why did Amalek come? What was the event that preceded Amalek's coming? The event that preceded Amalek's coming were the Jewish people were fighting. They were rebelling against God. The end of B'Shalach. They were in Rephidim. They tested God. So Moshe screamed, and he brought water with his stick, and then he hit the rock and water came out. Vayikra Shem Hamakom. So the parsha concludes that he called the name of the place Masa Meriva because of the contention. It talks of contention of the Jewish people and their testing of God. And what did they say? Hayesh Hashem Birkirbeinu, is God in our midst. In other words, they saw so many miracles. And at the moment they saw the miracles, when they saw the splitting of the sea, they sang the Shira. They sang the song. And they said, Zekeli van Veil, this is my God. A couple days later, they say, is God in our midst? In other words, what brought Amalek is determined to prevent the world from recognizing God. And what was the sin that brought Amalek against the Jewish people? Was the Jewish people trying not to recognize God. I think doubt. They had doubt. Is God in our midst or not? In other words, the idea is, you know, it's one thing to recognize God at the moment you see the Kriyas Yamsuf, when you see the sea splitting, when something is supernatural that can't be explained in any way. But our recognition of God can't be limited to those situations. Those situations have to have an effect on all other situations. The Sfasema says that the ten statements that God made at the time of creation correspond with the ten makos, with the ten plagues that were sent against the Egyptians, and that corresponds with the Aseres Hadibros, with the ten commandments. What's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is the ten plagues that showed God in the world. When nature is contravened, and what's the Aseres Hadibros? The ten Dibros, The Ten Commandments. God reveals himself to the Jewish people. But that corresponds with the ten statements that God made at creation. Because it's our responsibility. It's easy to recognize God at the time you have 10 plagues. It's easy to recognize God when God is speaking to us at Mount Sinai. But we have to take that and recognize God in nature. That God is the one who created the world and keeps the world going. And that is what Purim is about. Purim is about recognizing God's presence by us, even where God is hidden. And that was the idea of the Aron in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Aron in the second Beis HaMikdash was on the lower level, was a place, it was hidden. But it represents the perpetuation of Sinai, of the revelation. Sometimes the perpetuation of the revelation is hidden, but we have to continue to recognize that it's there.
Thank you very much. So, once again, we will not have class for the next 3 weeks.
April 7th we resume.
Right?
We resume on April 7th then.
April 7th will be our next class. And we'd like to wish everybody a good Shabbos and a good Shabbos.
And a good pulling.
Please clean off the tables. Clean off the tables. Leave the tablecloths on. We're davening Marv in about 3 minutes.